Now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Over the past 3 weeks, the vastness and diversity of our planet and its people have been made clear with reports from the aftermath of the tsunami. But people around the world face environmental challenges year-round. As the pressures of a globalizing economy continue, added stresses of many kinds are increasing. Is there an answer? It's rare, but yes, there are successes. When you return, it's a pride-filled show here on the Wild Side News. One would think that as humankind progresses, the intelligence and wisdom that we possess would quickly lead to a peaceful, harmonious, healthy world. But it seems that somehow we've taken a misstep on the road to tomorrow. The emerging global interdependence and the need to compete in the global economy are being felt not only in the developed world, with challenges to our consumerist societies and the resultant talk of global warming and even mass extinctions, but it has felt particularly hard in the small agrarian-based towns and villages around the world. Pressures to utilize the natural resources for food and housing and livelihood are creating critical ecological hotspots where something must be done. And although these are now well documented and noted, the question of what to do to help the developing peoples emerge into sustainable societies with these new pressures has been extremely difficult. Today, we dedicate this show to a small, creative organization that is bringing about large changes in the hopes for answers to these challenges. It's rare. That's it. Rare. And we take you around the world through songs and spirit and success in the hour ahead. In our first segment, we hear from St. Lucia in the Caribbean, out past Puerto Rico and Venezuela, and Paul Butler, whose unique vision, which honors cultures and in the process unites people and their environment, is changing the nature of change. And in our second segment, we take calls from South Africa and Arlington, Virginia, as we talk with Morney Farmer, a Pride campaign manager, and Megan Hill, communications director, about the Pride programs. It's a story of great hope, great wisdom, the kind of thing we talk about here on the Wild Side News each week. And this week, for the news, I want you to see just how easy it is to keep abreast of current nature news from the Wild Side News news page. Links to National Geographic, Orion Online, CNN Nature, and so much more. Get used to it. You'll be glad you did. We continue our journey now to St. Lucia, where Paul Butler joins us. Paul, so tell us, what's your day like looking like in the Caribbean today?
Hey, Sydney, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. You?
Good, not too bad. Thanks for letting me join you. Yeah, we've been working, as you know, for many years on this program. It's now operating, or has operated, in 62 countries around the world. So we're delighted to share our experiences with your listeners.
Well, 62 countries is a lot. You guys are really making a difference. Let's continue talking about actually what's involved. Hotspots are defined, that there's a strategy that goes in to sort of begin to look at what's happening, and that you choose a charismatic person who then begins this process. Can you help us take it from there?
Sure. We believe that conservation isn't just a biological challenge, it's a social, political, and economic one. And we believe that while people are at the heart of the problem, they're also the key to the solution. We work, as you mentioned, with charismatic, dynamic, and committed individuals at the sites where conservation is needed and where threats are taking place. The secret to our formula is exactly that, having a replicable model that can be easily adapted to sites around the world in different cultures and different geographic areas. We select an individual, bring him to one of our two university courses. We have a course at the University of Kent in England and a course at the University of Guadalajara at Outland in Mexico, the first in English, obviously, the second in Spanish. Here, the individuals join others who are working to conserve the biodiversity of their sites. They spend 10 weeks learning ecology, learning theory, social marketing, and how to assess the various factors, the various threats that are affecting their site. to then leave the university, return home, and spend the following 12 weeks or 14 weeks designing a project plan, hosting stakeholder meetings to clearly understand what's happening at the site, to draw up concept models, which are then ground truth using questionnaire surveys that are not only provide baseline data, but also help to understand where the various communities are in the sort of continuum of behavior change, whether they understand the threats, whether they understand the impacts that their own behaviors have on those threats, whether they understand the benefits of changing behavior, or whether they see many barriers to making those changes that are necessary. And then there follows a year of active campaigning, which involves a wide range of marketing tools, ranging from billboards and posters, sermons and school visits, costumes and puppets, which culminates in a second questionnaire survey to check where we are in effecting changes in knowledge, attitude, and practice. The students then return to the University of Kent, make their presentations, and design their follow-up strategy, which they will then use as they continue work after the first year of campaigning.
It's an amazing program because you're relying on systems that reach the human spirit in such a way and create community. How'd this all come about? You were involved in this process.
Yeah, I started doing this some 25 years ago with my colleagues in St. Lucia. We'd spent several years doing, let's say, traditional outreach, standing in front of people, talking about the silt loads that are affecting the rivers, and we found people were nodding, but they were actually nodding off to sleep. And we saw that despite our good intentions, we weren't really affecting change. What we recognized must happen is that people must become engaged. We looked at the corporate sector and saw numerous corporations selling products that people didn't need, didn't want, but it was done through clever and creative marketing, creating an interest in the product so that people would buy them. And we felt, and subsequently shown, that things that are fun engage people. People want to be involved, and you can get the message across. And as long as you're honest with people in giving them the facts and letting them make their own decisions, we found it a successful approach. The key is having local people run them and trying to hit people across a relatively short span of time with multiple different techniques, as I indicated, ranging from songs to sermons to bumper stickers and posters.
Well, you know, I have a sample sermon here. Mm-hmm. And now, I grew up in a Christian home, and actually was exposed to quite a bit of sermonizing. And here's the truth. When I heard this one, I got goosebumps because it brought back memories. Quite honestly, this is an extremely effective and wonderful and honest approach. So I'm going to play this little clip. It's short, and you can probably tell us more about this. And then we're going to talk more about some of these, the unique approaches, and then as well, some of the great successes. So let's see what happens here with this.
My sermon this morning is captioned God's Love in Nature. And I want you to journey with me this morning back into time, a time called the beginning, an earth with a sound ecological system, well-balanced ecosystem, clean, pure environment. Yes, that was paradise. Oh, my friends, I could imagine all the Amazonas, every species in those days, none were extinct. As they beautified, as they adorned the foliage or the flora with their lovely plumage. Oh, what a sight! Praise be to God!
You know what? That still works. My whole body is tingling. And you know, that it's very effective. And the thing I'm going to say is I believe that that is absolutely honest. The deliverer of that, who I have to assume is one of your campaign managers, is speaking from his heart.
Yeah, that's Lawrence Jean-Pierre. He's from St. Lucia. He's actually a lay preacher with the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and he was preaching a sermon on the environment. He actually wasn't the campaign manager. The role of our campaign managers is to bring in as many people as they can, whether it's musicians, paint artists, sermons writers, and preachers. And that was one of them. And we've had the pleasure to work with all religions, Hindu, Muslim, Christian, each of them giving their own sermons in their own words and linking the environment to their scriptures, whether it's the Quran or the Bible. And what we try to do is identify people who hold sway over communities, who people look up to and respect. That's why we work with religious leaders, but we also work with musicians. Younger people often look to musicians as their own heroes, and so we've worked with numerous local musicians to produce music, whether it's rap or reggae, country or ballad style, whatever is appropriate to the site. The musicians work with us to write songs that provide the facts that encourage people to take action, learn more about the environment, and hopefully change their behavior.
You know, since you brought it up, I have another clip here that is actually a reggae clip. Let's just let our listeners listen to this, because I think they'll start to understand really the power of your approach. Let's hear this now.
Shell of bird, we all know. Pink and pretty, flamingo. Bahamians, tell me, have you heard? The squash of our emerald green bird. Bright and beautiful, watch him fly. Jumping the parade up in the sky. Bahama pirate, I tell you so. Been here from long, long time ago. Bahamas, help our pirates, please. Don't cut down our pine forest trees. Bahama pirate, help them to survive. We must keep them alive. Columbus 1492, so many pirates, now so few. Lucayans had no emeralds green. Bahama pirates were given to the queen. Today our pirates only seen Abercrombie, now we're in the trees, they burn it. You were a pirate, how would you feel? Chased from your home by a quicklime deal.
You know, this is just smart stuff. I mean, this is, I can just imagine now all my listeners out there, and their heads are bobbing and their feet are tapping and they're feeling good, and that's just people who aren't even personally involved with this particular region or project. Imagine what must happen on the ground as people become part of this process.
Well, that's of course exactly what we hope. That track was from Diobia Man in the Bahamas. It was done about 10 years ago, one of our earlier campaigns where we worked with the Bahamas National Trust and an outstanding counterpart, Monique Clark. And she encouraged Diobia Man to produce that track, and it was recorded not just for the radio but also as a music video. And that campaign helped to facilitate the establishment of a reserve for the Bahama parrot on the island of Abaco, thanks to the really dedicated work of the Bahamas National Trust and all Bahamians who rallied to the cause.
Now, of course, in many cases, these songs go on to become fairly popular songs in a nation or in a region.
Yes, they do, exactly. Obviously, not everyone, and what we want is them to be locally popular. So if the song is written for a small community surrounding a protected area, we'd love for it to go nationally popular. What we really want is it to appeal to that exact target segment that we're focusing on, i.e. those people who live around that protected area or the area that we hope will become protected. Exactly.
So let's talk about that Your Campaign. We've talked about, for example, we've given examples of the music, bringing in local experts, people involved in education. We haven't really talked about that too much yet. We've talked about bringing in religious leaders. Give us a sense of a really effective approach. That would be terrific.
Well, as I said, it is an integrated approach. So our local counterparts work through a manual of 26 tasks, some of which we've already spoken about. Others involve going into schools, working with teachers to develop curriculum materials, whether it be coloring books or comic books, and also using costumes and puppets so that when they do go into school, they stand out from the crowd. It's not just another teacher standing in front of them talking from a textbook. It's somebody dressed up as the bird or as the turtle, whichever species we're working on, handing out badges and pins and brooches so that kids are rewarded for answering a question. The kid puts on the pin, which carries the message of the campaign, runs home all excited because a very large bird or target species has come to the school. It's the first time they've ever seen such a thing. Imagine, you know, a Disney character in a site where people don't see these kind of things. This is really new to them. In a rural area in Indonesia, for example, they run home super excited. The parents ask where they stole the pin from, the brooch. They said, "I didn't steal it. A huge bird came to my school today and gave it to me because I answered a question right." You know, as any parent would know, if your child is excited and you've just accused them of ripping off a brooch, you're now all ears listening to why a big bird came to your school, and the child is super excited. They write love letters to these animals. They become passionate about them and about their conservation. So the idea is to create an upswelling of interest in the environment. It takes time, it takes commitment, it's not easy, it's obviously easy to talk about, but it really is down to the dedication of the local people we have who are working with us as they work through the manual, as they do the various tasks, starting with, you know, schools and then working with religious leaders and with musicians, so that it's rather like an orchestra. You start with one instrument and then another instrument comes in, makes a little more noise, and then another one comes in, and if they're working in harmony, you've got a nice song that people want to listen to, in this case a nice message that we hope people will not only listen to but take to heart and change both knowledge, attitudes, and ideally, of course, behavior.
Now, of course, an important aspect of this, too many of these cultures and people and communities have really utilized or relied on these natural environments and in the process helped to destroy them. And what you're helping them as well to do is to establish economic stability in harmony with their environment. Let's talk about how you go about that.
Yeah, very often we try to partner with other conservation organizations so that we're bringing a piece of the picture, a piece of the solution to the table. If you only teach people through the methodology that we use that conservation is important but don't remove some of the barriers, then you're simply going to have people feeling guilty about clearing the forest. RARE has its own enterprise program where we strive to help develop ecotourism, whether it's training nature guides, creating trails, in the hope of creating some economic incentives as well as sort of the environmental education incentives to protect the environment. In other areas, we work in collaboration with other groups, like the Nature Conservancy in Komodo, for example, where we're doing an education campaign on talking about destructive fishing techniques. While we're doing the education, the Nature Conservancy is implementing various alternative fishing techniques, such as talking about fish aggregation techniques. So the idea is this is one part of a solution, and we try to bring other parts, either ourselves or working in partnership with others, recognizing that we need to create jobs at the same time as creating awareness, and that the two things together can help conservation.
We're talking with Paul Butler, who is the Vice President of RARE. You've had some extraordinary successes around the world. Talk about some, you know, there's some very serious outcomes that ultimately, although these sound like sort of fun and things, lead to very serious outcomes to the establishment of nature centers and parks. We've got about 30 seconds left. Help us understand that.
Yeah, we've helped to facilitate the establishment of reserves in partnership with the local lead agencies. They're the real heroes in a number of sites, including Grenada, Mount Hartmann, including St. Lucia, including the Bahamas, including several community reserves in Fiji. Our campaigns have helped to facilitate those. Equally, they've helped to facilitate the passage of legislation, the reduction of fires in Mexico, the collection of solid waste in the form of over 1 million plastic bottles in a small rural community in Mexico, in the Yucatan. Real tangible benefits and tangible changes in knowledge, attitudes, and behavior.
Paul Butler, Vice President of RARE, thanks for sharing your spirit and passion.
Thank you.
We next meet a Pride campaign leader when we come back on Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Ideas, they're everywhere. Good ones, bad ones, mostly just fleeting and gone. We've been talking about a good idea that is changing the world. In a moment, we meet one of the very special people who are leading a RARE Pride campaign, and the woman who keeps the show on the road. When we return here on the Wildside News, your Voice of the Earth radio network. You know, today's Wild Side News is the favorite show for me so far. I'm an unfettered romantic and a near pathological optimist, but quite honestly, there's a frustration that comes from being honest about the condition of our Earth and its people each week. So, as I've gotten to know more about RARE and its Pride campaigns, I feel a renewed optimism and sense that common sense and goodwill are alive and well on good old Mother Earth. So now we continue this RARE moment with two more proud Pride family members. Megan Hill joins us from Arlington, Virginia, where she is the Senior Director of Pride. Megan, welcome.
Good morning, Sydney. Thank you for having me on your show.
And from South Africa, I'm honored to have with us Morne Farmer.
Hello, Leslie. Sydney, how are you?
Very good, thanks. And you?
I'm feeling great, and thanks for the opportunity having me on your show.
Well, you sound really clear. It's amazing how good a connection this is. Megan, let's start with you. You have the extraordinary good fortune and its attendant challenges of really managing the day-to-day Pride campaigns around the world. Give us a sense of what that entails.
Well, I think I have the best job of anyone in the world at the moment.
I think you're right. It's a wonderful opportunity.
Yes, we're working in 29 sites around the world now implementing Pride campaigns, or rather I should say RARE doesn't implement Pride campaigns, our local partners do. The people like Morne, who work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, bringing positive change to their communities.
You know, let's talk a little bit about the partnership, because that's an important role in this. RARE and Pride work in partnership. That's primarily how these projects are funded. Give us a heads up on that.
Well, of the 29 campaigns that we're working on right now, RARE works in partnership. We don't work in a long-term at any specific site. As Brett and Paul have talked about earlier, we refine a specific tool, a specific methodology like the Pride Method, and help bring it to others for their long-term conservation activities at their sites around the world. Morne, who you'll meet with, works in partnership with an agreement we have with Conservation International that's funded by the Critical Ecosystem Partnership Fund that brings Pride to 13 biodiversity hotspots all over the world. Other partnerships that we have are with groups like the Mexican National Park Service, in partnership with an agency in Mexico called Niños y Crías, which means kids and critters, as well as the Wildlife Conservation Society, and this new agreement that we have with the Nature Conservancy that will continue to bring Pride to 30 more sites around the world.
Well, you're doing a great job. You're making major progress. And one of the things that I find interesting is the fact that it's almost as if with spare change, because these programs are very cost effective, you bring about major change.
That's what we're shooting for.
Well, listen, Morne, I really would like to hear from you now. And let's start out by tell us where you're calling from.
Sydney, I'm calling from South Africa, actually from a small town called Steinkopf. And this town is actually bordering Namibia in the north and has a population density of about 8,500 people. So it's actually a very small little town.
Now, out here in the United States, we're in winter. Tell us about your weather there, and also then give us a sense of your land.
Okay. Steinkopf, you know, is situated almost center of a very dry and arid landscape, which receive a very low rainfall figure, close to 400 millimeters per year. Currently, we are experiencing very dry and hot summer temperatures as high as 42 Celsius, while our winters can be very cold to extremely cold. Last night, we had our first rains for the year since last October.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, you're actually working in partnership with Pride, but you also have a day job. Let's talk about your day job, because that actually was how probably you got into this.
I'm also doing activities where I interact with the local community members, doing school visits and interact with the school children as well. Recently, I visited all the schools in the Namakwa region where I usually took a costume with me, and this is a costume representing the armadillo lizard. And the armadillo lizard is currently under threat because of the illegal pet trade. Now, there's a lot of other activities that we do, which is very effective communication tools, like legislation booklets. We're dealing with posters. We are designing materials to actually communicate the word of conservation to the local people and to actually spread the word of conservation, but also bring pride to our local communities.
Now, how long have you actually been working on this particular campaign with Pride?
It's our 14th month, so I've been working for 14 months now on this Pride campaign, and it's just a lovely job going out to the community, speak to the local people, because they are the custodians of this land, and we need to increase awareness around this, because we have such a unique and special area, and the need for conservation is there. So, but our people show interest, and the interaction, like I said, is just wonderful and special. You know, directly interact with the people and the children there.
Morning, you know, I can tell by your voice you're a very charismatic person. You have a really wonderful voice. But you, I also have posted some images of your puppet, your costume. That is really an amazing thing. Now, is this something that you actually put together yourself?
Yes, this one of the goals, I think, for this Pride campaign is to actually involve locals. And what I did is to, firstly, we identify flagship species, and there were certain criteria that we looked at. And first, we wanted a sort of inhabitant of the area, which is endemic to the area, which means that it's found nowhere else on the planet. And we selected the armadillo lizard. And so what I did is, you know, we got a loco from Steinkopf area, from the Namakland area. She produced it, and it's just amazing to see the people of Namakland relate to it, and people are feeling proud because this is their own armadillo, and they are going to look after it and protect and conserve it. And recently we actually did a film trip in the whole Namakland of in the area, and we wanted to actually make a film about this to learn the kids more about the environment and the different species occurring here, as well as because we have such a unique biodiversity in the area. So and it was just amazing when I put on the costume and walked through the streets of Namakland and to see the reactions of people. People gave me hugs, some of them gave kisses even. So yeah, it was amazing, you know, for the first time in history that such a Pride campaign can take place in Namakland. It was just awesome. Yeah.
Morning, the real question is, tell me, how is this affecting your community and the success of your environment there?
I think the first changes that one can see, I think I can give you two examples, actually. In this 14 months, you know, what happened a while ago was that at our local primary school, a bunch of kids was playing one day with a mole who happened to be at the wrong time in the wrong place. And as kids usually are, they started chasing this blind little animal until a teacher noticed it and you know, to see what's going on. And she was desperately looking for me to come and save this creature, and as everybody was too scared to touch it. And in the second phase, tourists were busy poaching quiver trees. Now, quiver trees is an endemic plant to the area, and transporting it illegally. And this is a huge problem that we're facing every day in the Namakland area. And local people noticed this was wrong and phoned our officers to ask for advice and what they can do to prevent their plants to be removed from its natural habitat.
That's really
the moral. You know, the moral of the two stories are that people now do know where and where we can help to solve this problem, even if we had to refer this, which unfortunately has not been possible as far as 1 year back. So people are starting to realize that there are people doing Pride campaigns and take care of the environment. And people take that responsibility on, and sort of an ownership culture that it's my responsibility. I'm the owner of this land and I need to take care of the environment.
The amazing thing is the fact that it's such a simple and elegant and wonderful program, and it works so effectively. I would guess that prior to the Pride campaign, perhaps this awareness wasn't there to that degree.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. And that's what I like also about this Pride campaign. All the materials are very simple materials, you know, but very effective, very much effective. And even if I go out to certain places that people would ask me, I love that article that you wrote in the press. I love that radio show that you did on the environment. And people are sort of understanding why we need to actually conserve this special and unique area.
Megan, we have about a minute left. It's amazing how the time flies. I wish we had a lot more time to talk about this. But people, let's have people know how they can find out a lot more about Rare and Pride through websites and however you want them to contact you. And also, how can they help?
Certainly. I think for more information on Pride and all of our programs here at Rare, people can go to the World Wide Web, to rareconservation.org, and get a great overview of both Pride and Rare's other programs. We are very proud to work with such marvelous people like Mornay and to see the change that they empower in their communities and really become catalysts for positive environmental change in their communities is really inspiring to me and to all of our staff worldwide.
I want to thank everyone from Rare, Megan and Mornay. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And You know, this is one of my favorite shows that I've ever done because it gives us such hope. I wish you all great success because as you succeed, so too the rest of us. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios until we meet again here on the Wild Side News.